Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. All right, man, we've got a great show lined up in front of us today. We're going to be talking about Trey Harris. We're going to talk a little running backs here, too. Seth McGowan. There in Indianapolis, what is he going to do coming out of Kentucky? But I first want to start the show. Well, we're going to talk about Pat Bryant, too. But want to start the show talking about this injury here to Malik Nabers. This is not new news, but it is notable news in that his injury recovery is taking a lot longer than anticipated.
Yeah, it's not new news necessarily, but it does seem to get worse every time something else trickles out about Malik Nabers' knee injury, I guess, is the way I would frame it. Like Malik Nabers' one positive news update challenge, I guess, is the way I would frame it right now. The Athletic's Dan Duggan reported on May 18th that Nabers underwent, quote, a cleanup procedure on his knee, you know, a few weeks back. It removed scar tissue that was causing stiffness. Wasn't expected to impact his recovery timeline, but the team at that point said that they were, quote, hopeful that Nabers will be ready for week one. And then John Harbaugh, this was, I believe, last week, came out and said that the team is not sure when Nabers is going to return to the field, saying this was, quote, not a simple knee in related to the injury, that he's working really hard, everything like that. You know, they're hoping he's back by camp, but they're certainly not guaranteeing it. Right now, just based on, and obviously I'll have Malik Nabers' profile up on the site next week when the year three wide receivers start trickling out on June 1st. Really interesting class, honestly, just that 2024 class continues to still be extremely fascinating. So Nabers will be among that group, obviously not a full season sample. So great player. I don't have any questions about that, but
yeah,
at this point, like reading all of these updates, you know, I just can't imagine that Malik Nabers is even available for week one. And even if he is,
no way.
I'm not expecting him to. I might not, honestly. Like, I think it would be a bonus if he was himself at any point in the 2026 NFL season, which I think is really unfortunate because he's obviously a great player.
Well, and isn't it, he is the anchor to this entire wide receiver room. He's going to allow all these other guys to do what they do, right? Like, if you look at the rest of the wide receiver room, it's Darius Slayton, it's Darnell Mooney, it's Malachi Fields. Those are your top, I would say your top three other wide receivers. Calvin Austin is also in the mix. I think Isaiah Hodgins has shown flashes, but probably not consistently. Jalen Hyatt, I mean, does he even make the roster? There's nobody else, right? So it's like, it's Darius Slayton, Darnell Mooney, Malachi Fields, and Calvin Austin. Those are your four next best guys here. But it doesn't matter. Malik Nabers, again, is the anchor to that wide receiver room, right? Like, he has to be in there for these other guys to work. You know, Darius Slayton can play off ball. He could play, you know, flanker. Darnell Mooney can play flanker slot. Like, Calvin Austin needs to play in the slot. Malachi Fields, he's the one guy that could probably, you know, again, played a lot of X at Notre Dame. But again, man, Malik Nabers, man, like, he is that versatile move around piece. And that's probably the most concerning part of it, is that I don't think they have another player that can do what Malik Nabers does in terms of versatility.
Oh, they certainly don't. Yeah, I mean, they don't really have anybody of that caliber. I would have said, honestly, if Nabers was going to be healthy and like they added Fields, they added Mooney, they added Calvin Austin. By the way, I think they're going to play a lot more heavy personnel packages, fewer three wide receiver sets in general. They added Isaiah Likely, Theo Johnson still on the roster, a player that they're high on. Pat Ricard, fullback, was added to the mix here. Jackson Dart is talking about how they're just going to run the piss out of the ball. They're going to just give it to Cam Scadaboo over and over again, who's also coming off a serious injury, but is certainly much more ahead of his timeline. Like, it does sound like they're going to be a pretty run-heavy operation. I get all that. If that was true, I would have said, like, maybe Darius Slayton doesn't make this final roster. But we know that Darius Slayton finds a way. He is inevitable to stick on this Giants roster. I actually kind of think this Nabers injury situation gives him yet another window to be on the team. But to me, I do think that this all just makes a lot less sense without Malik Nabers healthy and in the mix. But, you know, I do think it at least, like, bumps these other guys up in interest level, I guess, for me, from like a production standpoint with what they are going to be called on to do. I certainly think if this is going to be a very run heavy team, which it sounds like it will be, right? It sounds like that's the way they want it. You know, Greg Roman's on the staff here. I think he's going to have a pretty big voice in addition to Matt Nagy about what this offense wants to be. I really don't have like a good feel on what the Giants' identity will be at this point, but I do think they're going to play with some more heavier personnel packages and stuff like that. As I mentioned, they'll have a fullback on the field and Pat Ricard, the whole deal. I do think if that's the case, you know, I think Malachi Fields fits that type of offense really well. Big bully ball type, take shots down the field. I've mentioned with Malachi that the static kind of stop routes do fit Jackson Dart's game really well. Malachi Fields is a really good blocking receiver. So it's very clear that this coaching staff, specifically John Harbaugh, I talked about this when we broke down Malachi Fields. Harbaugh very clearly, based on his comments, really wanted Fields. Like, he was a Harbaugh guy. I think Fields is going to have an opportunity to play early, play often, and play a pretty big role with Nabers out there. So nobody wins in these situations when a great receiver is not going to have like the impact that he should. But I do think Fields is maybe a guy who is going to get more opportunity early than it might have seemed.
It is hilarious when you are describing this scenario for Malachi. So you're telling me that Malachi Fields is playing at Notre Dame again? That's what you're telling me.
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, and I do think that Fields is capable of doing more than that, like being a perimeter jump ball guy. But, you know, again, if they're going to want to get into 21 personnel, they're going to want to get into 22 personnel with the fullback on the field. They're going to want to play 13 personnel, 12 personnel, the whole deal. Like, I think Fields makes sense as a guy that will be on the field all the time. You know, it's just because of his blocking ability, and because even if he's not the best straight line speed separator, he's a jump ball option. He's a threat. He can separate. I think and sink his hips a little better on like curls, stops, dig routes over the middle of the field, slants and stuff like that. So some of those like isolated patterns. So I think he actually is, again, going to be a very high snap player. You know, how productive he'll be, that will be kind of TBD. But he's definitely somebody that I think, like, right now, if Nabers is not going to be on the field in the early portion of the season, and like I said, I think we'll see the greatness of Malik Nabers once again in 2027, not 2026 necessarily here, which I maybe I'm fear mongering. It's May, whatever. Like, let's hope I'm wrong about that. But that's just kind of how I'm operating right now. Maybe he's tearing up at the back half of the season at the very best. I think that's possible, but, you know, we'll see. I think that Fields just gets a lot of opportunity to run and go with this thing early in his rookie season.
Unfortunately for the Giants, I actually do think that they have a really good ecosystem there. You know, I think the improvements along the offensive line, again, they've got an adult in the room in John Harbaugh. And you know what? Their running back room is really solid. Cam Scadaboo, I don't know what he's going to look like coming off the injury, but I know Tyrone Tracy can play. Like, I know he can play, and he can be a good receiver out of the backfield. He can, you know, play between the tackles. He can bounce outside. I don't know how much Devin Singletary's got left in the tank, but I think as a third option, I think he's great. You know, as a third running back, I think he's good. Cam Scadaboo, like I said, will kind of sort of be the X factor here, but I do know that Tyrone Tracy could play. Isaiah Likely, good playmaker at the tight end position. Theo Johnson, really good athlete there too. And, you know, Chris Manhertz is the third string tight end. I think folks are going to get really sick of seeing Chris Manhertz. I think he's going to be on the field more than people like. You know what I'm saying? If they're going to try to really establish the run here.
He's basically like an extra offensive tackle. That's who Chris Manhurts has been for like multiple teams. He is that just pure inline blocker, which I think makes sense. And honestly, that might be a way where we see Isaiah Likely is one of those rare tight ends who actually is like kind of a downfield vertical threat. So when you look, I do think, you know, and I've been having a lot of these conversations like on my Yahoo show and writing about this stuff. And we've talked about it too, like the NFL's move to, you know, these, some of these heavier personnel packages, I do think we'll get a little bit overrated this off season. You know, like I think it's going to be a big time talking point, and then some teams will try it and find out you can't just wave the more tight ends magic wand and like, oh, our offense is as good as the Rams. Especially because when you think about how when the Rams got into like 13 personnel, one of the reasons that that really worked for them is because they had Terrence Ferguson, who wasn't a productive player necessarily, but he was like a vertical option to clear. Like he was truly like a sacrificial route runner from the tight end position, which is very, very rare. And then they still had two other quality tight ends. Obviously, then Puka Nacua, who was averaged, I was looking this up yesterday, averaged over 6.1 yards per route run out of 12 and 13 personnel last year, which is obnoxiously high. And at like a high sample size, too, which is insane.
That's outrageous. What are you talking about?
It is outrageous. Yeah, he ran, I have this right here. He ran 114 routes out of 12 and 13 personnel, which is 18th most among wide receivers. This is in the and regular season. And he averaged 6.19 yards per route. The second place was Luther Burden on 5.13 at 63 routes. So not even close to like the same sample size. JSN, 150 routes, 4.91. So obviously they had, you know, a great receiver. Also, Devontae Adams had 9 touchdowns out of those packages too. So like they were able to do it because of all these things. Again, getting back to the Giants here, I do actually think they have a guy in Isaiah Likely that they can have 3 tight ends on the field, and one of those guys actually is a downfield threat. But Chris Manhurts, you're right, it's going to be on the field a ton. It's just kind of like a pure inline blocking type.
Yeah, if you're new to the whole yards per route run thing, it's like anytime you get over 2, you're doing good. Anytime you get over 3, you're doing great. 6 is outright. That's insane. That's an insane number.
It's insane. Like I said, third place out of 12 and 13 combined for wide receivers was JSN, 4.91, but that's also astronomically high because the fourth place was George Pickens at 3.73. So fourth place to freaking first place is almost double. That's insanity. So that's a big part of why the Rams were able to actually run a functional offense out of what is essentially usually just like a goal line package. I don't think a ton, again, I think a ton of teams will just like, clearly by the draft this year and some of the free agencies, like just push the more tight end button and like, this is going to be great for us, right? Well, you actually have to have an offense that puts it together well. I kind of think the Giants sort of do in their tight end room, but we'll see. And that could, like I said, I do think Fields is the guy who will be on the field a lot in those situations with all of those tight ends. So I do think this is what the Giants are going to have to do this year, because you typically, like going back a couple of years ago, I was in Malik Nabers' rookie season, I was like, yeah, they're not really running offense. They're kind of running like a Malik Nabers fantasy usage scam, because they were like spam him targets. And obviously he's great. Nobody's saying you should throw the ball less to him, but that's just not going to, I don't think that's going to be possible for the majority of the season based on his health.
I think it's fair to wonder if he, because of that heavy usage, whether or not that also contributed to an early injury for him too. You know, he's getting a lot of these touches, and some of them, a lot of them are in the middle of the field.
Yeah,
where he's taking some hits.
It's fair to wonder. I mean, a lot of these guys that get the kind of like, targets over the middle of the field. And I do think there's a difference between like JSN, who gets like a lot of targets over the intermediate middle of the field, and like some of the guys that do get the layup targets, which, you know, especially fantasy managers love, like all those just easy button targets. But yeah, you are taking a lot more punishment than wide receivers. And the, I have thought about like if we need to start considering wide receivers to be, just the injury rates might end up being different at that position than based on when the number one guys were handling a lot of volume or these X receivers getting a lot of targets outside the numbers and like along, like dashing out of the sideline, as opposed to, Nabers getting a lot of creative touch opportunities. That does add up to punishment. It's also fair to wonder, James, if the New York Giants just might be cursed at this position. And obviously, man, you can say the MetLife Field turf, the whole deal, but like,
yeah, right.
OBJ, Sterling Shepard, like, dude. I mean, yeah, obviously for me, Sterling Shepard belongs in the conversation with Malik Nabers and Odell Beckham Jr., of course. But yeah, just of course,
of course, of course, obviously.
But you know, it's just a lot of guys like that have had injuries at this position, and it's unfortunate.
Is there an electrical substation nearby? We need, this needs to be investigated here.
Investigated reporting there. Yes. Let's get that. Let's get
Pat Bryant, the profile is, again, this is all part of the second year profiles. Third year profiles are coming out relatively soon here as well. But second year profiles are on the site. There's a ton of these. I'm going to be honest with you, Matt. There are some that I'm like, this is how you know Matt is an absolute sicko degenerate. You know, like, why is he charting this dude? You know, but no, Pat Bryant is a really interesting profile. Not one of the sicko degenerate ones, because I did want to see the Pat Bryant profile. I thought he really flashed at different times here for Denver. I think his overall numbers are average, maybe just a touch below average. 65% success rate versus man, 77% success rate versus zone, 50% versus press. When you look at those numbers, knowing the thresholds of the 70-80 rule we have for man zone, he's obviously below those numbers, just touch. But there are certain areas of his game where, golly, I thought he actually did really, really well. He was really good in the short and intermediate.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think he's a role player, you know, parentheses complimentary is Pat Bryant. Yeah. And I think that's just like, yeah, when we're looking at some of these percentiles, as I always say, obviously, there's a little bit of a selection bias here. I'm not sampling like some of the worst receivers in the NFL. Every now and again, you do get some of those guys in the mix here, but obviously I'm not charting like fourth and fifth receivers. You know, a guy who's finishing with these levels from a success rate standpoint, probably somebody that does fit into that like third receiver in the NFL bucket. And I do think that that's what he's kind of set up to be this year behind Cortland Sutton and Jalen Waddle. All that being said, I do really like some of Pat Bryant's abilities, you know, particularly as kind of a big slot receiver. We talked about him when he was drafted by the Denver Broncos, and I kind of said that the player he reminded me of, ironically, was former Denver Broncos wide receiver Tim Patrick. And I kind of think that's a little bit of who he, you know, does compare to from a reception perception standpoint. I believe that is one of his player comparisons, and the player comparison tool is Tim Patrick. But he took just 39% sample snaps outside in year one for Denver, 58.4% in the slot, in the backfield for 2.3%. He was on the ball more than off the ball, and I kind of think that that makes sense for some of what he is, like, truly a, like, we talk about big slot, power slot, the whole deal. He is definitely like a power player at that slot receiver position. Good blocker, can beat zone coverage, can win underneath, and is a pretty physical guy. So I like him being an on-ball player to kind of essentially be that true F receiver in this offense.
You know, as you mentioned, alignment, you had him at 60-40 in the slot. It's interesting deployment for me, because he was primarily an outside guy for Illinois. And when you charted him as a prospect, I think you also highlighted the fact that he wasn't getting open consistently downfield, which again, I think might surprise some people, because Pat Bryant had some really nice collegiate highlights. But I think that's the power of the charting, right? Like, you're going down by down, like, how consistently is this guy getting open? Had some really nice downfield highlights, but as you mentioned, couldn't really do it on a down by down basis. In the pros, 45.5% success rate on the nine routes. Man, that's a tough number.
No, it's a tough number. I don't think you're going to see a lot of straight line separation from him. And Denver didn't use him in that way. He only ran a 9 route on 5.8% of his routes. So like, he's definitely not one of those players. They did try to get him down the football field on breaking routes, post routes under just under 16%, dig routes 23%. He had a within the average success rate on both patterns. So he can definitely split safeties and be kind of that guy that's open, especially against zone coverage on those bigger breaking routes. When he's going to make a true kind of straight line vertical play, it will probably be a contested catch opportunity, which again, he was really good at. Both, I think in college, a lot of those highlights were probably contested downfield plays. Then that was true totally. As a rookie as well. 26% sampled targets were contested. He caught 70% of them. So definitely some good opportunities there in terms of being a tight coverage winner. He just was one of those guys that I think is going to be a good role player for Denver. I think asking him to be a true number two would have been a stretch. I think asking a guy like Troy Franklin or certainly even Marvin Mims and those guys, it would have been like stretches to say they were true number two receivers, but they don't have to be that anymore. Jalen Waddle, Cortland Sutton. Man, it's funny. Like, I think almost like the Jalen Waddle Denver trade, because of when it happened, like it wasn't the opening moment of free agency. And then obviously we had the draft. Like, I've gone back and started putting together like fantasy rankings and stuff this year, looking at a dynasty ranking. I think people are too low on what Waddle's going to do with the Broncos. I know the one thing obviously we should talk about is Bo Nix's freaking, foot. Like, where is he at from that, or ankle? Correct. I believe ankle injury. Like, where is that at this point? But yeah, I'm like 9 in the dynasty rankings too. I'm like 9 spots ahead of the market on Jalen Waddle. I just think he's just such an underrated receiver. So
I agree.
I think a guy like Pat Bryant kind of completes and rounds that room together.
Imagine Jalen Waddle in a Sean Payton offense, brother. Dude, guy's going to go crazy. Come on, man.
I think he is absolutely going to go crazy. I think he is absolutely going to go crazy.
And I think we're overthinking it, dude. Like, what are you talking about?
I think people are totally overthinking a couple of things here.
Sean Payton, let's go.
I think people are overthinking a couple of things here. They're looking at like Jalen, and obviously Waddle's got to stay healthy. That's like the biggest negative. Yeah, it's hard to know how that's going to be, right? Totally. Anytime we're talking about guys that get hurt, let's just say that off the top. We just had a whole conversation about Malik Nabers and injuries. We'll see about Jalen Waddle. But anyways, I think like number one, people don't understand just how bad it got in Miami last year, especially from just like a raw volume standpoint. They barely ran any plays. They're looking at, Waddle's raw stats after after Tyreek Hill got hurt. But he did have some big games. His film was awesome. He's so explosive, and he's played a lot of X receiver for the Dolphins, the outside on ball player. He's not going to have to do that in Denver because he's got two guys who can run on ball with Cortland Sutton and Pat Bryant, who we're talking about here, who took more snaps on the line than off the line. I was going to get through all the fun move around stuff. And I just don't think we've seen like a real game breaking talent in this Broncos receiver core yet. Like, Cortland Sutton is a nice player. I think Waddle is like a tier or two better than Cortland Sutton. So Sutton's going to have his role. He's going to get his numbers. That Waddle's going to have like top 5 receiver numbers or anything like that, but I think he's going to have a huge impact on this team. But the fact that like they do have these good role players, like Troy Franklin isn't worthless. Marvin Mims isn't completely worthless in his role. Right. And Pat Bryant can obviously give them a lot as this bigger slot option. It's not Davis Webb call the plays. That's another thing we are forgetting about maybe a little bit. That's like true. Not Sean Payton call the plays for now. Well, that is at least the situation.
How many weeks? How many weeks, man?
Well, if it goes well and like they have all the pieces that it should go well, I don't know. That situation's just a little on my radar.
I'm gonna say 6 weeks before Sean Payton just goes absolutely insane and says, "Nope, give me that freaking clipboard.
Give me that sheet back." I get it.
Dude, he's done it for, come on, man. Like, this guy's obsessed with offense. You're talking 20 plus years doing the dang thing and like being incredibly good at it. We kind of washed this over, but people were clowning Sean Payton that first year he got to Denver. Like, oh, the games passed him by, all this and so. And it's like, yeah, no, actually it hasn't, like once he got his guys in place, offense is functioning really well, doing super good and making great plays. And it's just like, I just don't see it, man. Like, I get Davis Webb wanted the play calling duties and all that kind of stuff, but like, there's just no way that you're this good at that thing. And you just give that up that easily. if the offense ends up taking any kind of like road bump, which I think it will because of the Bo Nix injury, I'm going to say 6 weeks, dude.
6 weeks.
I'm going to say 6 weeks before Sean Payton's back and like grabbing that clipboard out of Davis Webb's hand and just being like, all right, cool. I'm not going to make a big show of it. That's probably what's going to happen.
I feel
he's probably going to do it. You know, he's probably not going to make a big show of it and just be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to seek kind of sort of like secretly call the plays. I'm not going to tell the media. Media's going to figure it out. They're going to see what's happening and figure it out.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It'll be one of those moments where like you see him on the sideline with the
play sheet. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Who's Peyton? Peyton's holding the play sheet. He hadn't been holding it for the audio listeners. I'm face covered with a notebook here. Like it's like that with, I think Daboll was like that in New York where he would never say it until like they'd have a great game. Be like, yeah, it was called.
Sean Payton in a nutshell, right? That's going to happen.
Last year, so just in closing here, last year, Denver was 14th in success rate on offense, but 21st in explosive play rate. I think that's where the Waddle thing really comes into play here. It's like they want to be a consistent, they definitely want their run game to be better. So do you have you done Jonah Coleman yet? He's on the site, right?
I like him. Oh, yeah. Go check it out, guys. Listen, Jonah Coleman's looking.
Did we talk about Jonah Coleman on the podcast? My brain is fried. That's very possible.
I'm relatively confident we did. And if we didn't, that's a huge oversight because I like Jonah Coleman a lot. And I think he fits this. RJ Harvey, and I talked about this in my profiling of RJ Harvey too, right? That he's a home run hitter, right? That he can make big plays, but man, he strikes out a lot. Right. And I think that's exactly what we saw in Denver. He wasn't a consistent player. And I think that drove Denver nuts. Right.
Yep.
Well, what do they do this draft cycle? I can't believe we're down this rabbit hole, but I love it. But what do they do this draft cycle? They go and get one of the most consistent performers that I charted in across these 2 years that we've done running back charting. Jonah Coleman was incredibly consistent, generating positive yards, and he has some juice. I thought he had some big play juice too. So I think Jonah Coleman's going to, again, if they didn't like the consistency they got from RJ Harvey, Jonah Coleman's going to step right in and provide that consistency. If J.K. Dobbins ends up getting hurt, and we know he's got a very long injury history, Matt. Mm-hmm. I think that combination of RJ Harvey and Jonah Coleman, I think that's a really interesting combo. And I do think that Jonah Coleman can step right in there and just be, again, that 1A to that backfield.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Coleman too. We did not talk about him in the pod, at least based on the outline here. I searched. I don't think we have had a discussion on Jonah Coleman, but I like Jonah Coleman not just because he was also on my Yahoo show prior to the draft.
There you
go. A really good interview with him. But that was a great interview, and two things really stuck. Well, he talked about just how much pride he takes in like the little things. He like doesn't drop the football. Great pass protector. I believe he only fumbled one time in his collegiate career, and it was his final season. As he said, ball security is job security. And he talked about how just like he really reads out blocks and stuff. Great, great interview with Jonah Coleman. Awesome dude. I'm really rooting for as well. And I agree. He definitely has a lot of opportunity here in Denver because they liked RJ Harvey, but I do think you're right. That drove them crazy a little bit that when he had a real runway to go, he scored a lot of touchdowns, but was very, very boom or bust as a runner, and a lot more bust than boom, if we're being honest.
Yeah, like I said, there's just if you go to the website and you go check out his profile, he's just so consistent everywhere, you know. Whether it's man, whether it's gap, whether it's inside, whether it's outside, I just think – he just provides consistency, you know, and
a lot of yellow, which is
a lot of yellow,
a lot of yellow, like just get on base, baby.
100%. 100%. And like I said, man, like I think for the first words out of on this profile is that this is a guy that coaches are going to love. You know, I think he's just like I said, I think he's a high energy guy, very consistent. And can really provide you excellent production, especially I charted him out of zone. I thought he was really good in zone, but just getting to the outside, I thought he was a really, really good player. So, Jonah Coleman there in Denver, I think it's going to be a really, really great fit. Man, we did a full-on Denver breakdown. Golly, we talked about Waddle. We talked about Coleman. I love it. Denver fans better be happy with this segment for sure. We're going to stay in this division. We're going to talk about the Chargers. I want to talk about Trey Harris, another player that I think flashed at different times. And again, his numbers are actually very similar to Pat Bryant. 63% success rate versus man, 75% success rate versus zone. Played a little bit more outside than inside when compared to Pat Bryant. I want to talk about his run blocking too, man. This guy gets after it in the run game. But talk to me a little bit about Trey Harris and what you might see here in year number two in this Chargers offense with Mike McDaniel.
Yeah, Trey Harris, another guy I think probably like maybe a number three receiver in the NFL, probably the number three receiver for the Chargers this year. I'm actually really excited to check in on Quentin Johnston and see what his full season profile looks like, because I definitely think he took us. We talked about him as kind of a guy that took a step at the beginning of last season. So I don't think, and obviously they're another team that is definitely leaning into more heavy personnel packages this year. They were number five, top five last year in terms of plays with three plus receivers on the field last year with the Los Angeles Chargers. That is not going to be the case this year. They signed Charlie Kolar, blocking tight end in free agency, a guy who literally went on a long soliloquy at the opening of offseason activities to the media about how much he loves blocking late in games. So like, we know what he's there to do. Okay. They signed fullback Alec Ingold. And then after the draft, they picked up David Njoku. So like, they're clearly going to run more, and they have Aronde Gadsden too. So they're going to play more of those type, you know, fullback, tight end, heavy stuff there. So that's going to be the case for that offense. I think Ladd McConkey is going to be on the field a lot there. Quentin Johnson's probably the second receiver. So how much opportunity is there for Trey Harris this year? That remains to be seen. And I would say like he had a solid rookie year profile, but nothing really spectacular, which is fair for a guy coming out of Ole Miss, which is a little bit of a goofy offense. It's fair to expect some sort of a ramp up play kind of period for him. The interesting thing about Harris, you mentioned his run blocking. That was something that really stood out. Like, I mentioned the last year's Chargers did have multiple tight ends and did have a fullback and like only one receiver on the field. It actually was usually Trey Harris, weirdly enough, in those packages because they liked his run blocking so much. Now, obviously, that was Greg Roman. It's Mike McDaniel now. Is McDaniel going to just want to be more over-indexed on speed and verticality, which I think obviously Ladd McConkey and Quentin Johnston bring more of that dimension into those personnel packages. I think that's something to wonder. But with Harris, he also kind of got to play all three receiver positions. So if you just look at his receiver alignment data, outside on 61% of snaps, in the slot for 32%, in the backfield for 6%. So backfield obviously sometimes is a condensed blocker in the backfield, like the insert player, sometimes when he was used in motion going from one side of the field to the other at the snap of the football, off the line for 49%, on the line for 51%. So again, that's about as movable of a deployment plan as you possibly could get for a non-featured receiver. So he kind of got to moonlight a little bit at all three receiver positions, which I think will be interesting for him in year two.
Yeah, when you take a look at what the roster construction looks like, I'm curious. I don't think they have a clear-cut number two. So I'll ask you, do you think he has the profile? Because I will say this, he's got a really interesting, it's not a bad X-receiver route tree. 74% success rate on digs, 55% success rate on nines with heavy usage, by the way, 23% route participation. So 55% success rate on the nines, that's respectable, man. And then 80% success rate on curls. So he can threaten vertical. He can stop down and curl in and present an underneath target to the quarterback. And then, you know, again, we'd like him to be over 80% on slants, but, you know, 76.5% success rate on slants, that's not bad either. It's a classic X receiver route tree. I just wonder if he is the X and if we've got Ladd McConkey out there in two receiver sets with him.
Are we still holding Quentin Johnston's disastrous rookie year maybe too much against him? I think that's the question.
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, look, Jim Harbaugh has a really long history of getting the most out of his guys. And I think we can all agree that if Harbaugh had not come into the room, QJ's NFL career would be in jeopardy. I think that is pretty, I don't know. I don't know if that's indisputable, but certainly having Jim Harbaugh come through and figure out, okay, we got this guy. We spent a high draft pick on him. We got to get production out of him. We're going to figure out a way. Jim Harbaugh is a master at this. He's an absolute master. So I think what we saw last year is, I think that is literally the best of what we can see from Quentin Johnston. And I know I'm being a little heavy-handed with that, but again, I think that is near the tip top of what we can see in regards to QJ.
Do you know who led the Chargers in yards per game last year?
If I had to guess, I would have guessed Ladd McConkey.
You would be incorrect. If we are looking at the regular season and the playoffs,
It's not Keenan Allen.
It actually was not Keenan Allen. Okay. He did lead the team in targets, 130 targets in the regular and postseason.
Jeez.
He was third in yards per game at 44.6. Second was Ladd McConkey at 48.3. Quentin Johnston, 50.3 yards per game. He did miss some time. Do you know who led the Chargers in drop rate last year?
Oh, I, of course, would have said Quentin Johnston here. I'm assuming that's not the right answer, though.
Nope. It was Keenan Allen at 6.3%.
Oh, no.
Grade, seven not drops. Keenan.
Not so Keenan. Keenan Allen. No.
4.8% for Quentin Johnston, 3.8% for Ladd McConkey. Do you know who led the Chargers in receiving touchdowns last year?
You're really going to tell me QJ led the team in receiving touchdowns, bro?
Eight receiving touchdowns for Quentin Johnston in fewer than a full season, 15 games, regular season, and the playoffs. Ladd McConkey, six in 17 games. Keenan Allen, four in 18 games. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, like, that might, yes, I agree that Ladd McConkey is better than Quentin Johnston and should be is the easiest bounce back candidate in the entire NFL this year. And I think he's going to have a big, big year. But I do think the idea that Trey Harris, who, you know, stat wise, I would say reception perception wise, had a perfectly solid rookie season, but didn't do anything like, oh boy, you know, I mean, again, just stats wise, regular season,
nothing I catch.
32 catches, 344 yards, one touchdown. Our first comment was, man, his run blocking was really awesome, you know, which is obviously important for a receiver. We are very, very much a pro receiver blocking podcast.
Reception, perception,
very pro receiver blocking, even if it's not something I chart, it's something I talk about, you know, perhaps too much, some people would say. But that's our first highlight of him. I think maybe we're putting the cart before the horse. Like, he can just push QJ aside. I just think, like, I think we do. I think personally, and I'm saying me, I do this maybe sometimes too. So I'm turning the spotlight on myself a little bit here. Then maybe sometimes we still hold Quentin Johnston's, I think, truly disastrous rookie season against him a little bit when thinking about him right now. Like, I think he might be a solid starting receiver, but, you know, maybe I'm going to do the charting here in the next couple of he's a year four player, year four drop later on in June. Maybe I'll do the charting. I'm like, never mind. I take it back. But
I know. Okay. All right. We'll put a pin in that. Reserve that for a future podcast for sure. I did think that Trey Harris came on a lot more in the back half of last year than he did in the front half. So, you know, I thought his involvement was a lot more, and I thought he just looked more comfortable in the back. And that's what you would expect from a rookie, you know, especially a rookie who is playing the role that he is playing as an outside wide receiver. So it's going to be really interesting. Yeah. You talk about this bounce back statistically here for Ladd McConkey, no Keenan Allen in the room. Although the GM did talk about, we're not closing the door on reuniting with Keenan, which come on, man. Don't
love, love Keenan. Don't do it. I don't think that makes any sense for this team. Like I said, 130 targets.
You're blocking the production. Blocking the development of your young guys, and these guys need to develop. And they have a good, I think they have a good young room, you know. Let these guys develop. Let them, you know, I don't know. Like, I love Keenan Allen. Love Keenan Allen. Former Cal guy, man. Of course, I love Keenan. One of my favorite players of all time. I hope he doesn't come back to the Chargers, man.
Yeah. Especially if they're playing more two tight end sets where they got a fullback on the field, then it definitely doesn't, like, what's he going to catch, 20 balls for you? I mean, I don't know. The culture guy, I guess. Sure. I mean, I don't know. But we did say like Trey Harris is on the field a lot when they went to heavy personnel in 13, 12, 21, and 22 personnel combined last year. Trey Harris led the wide receiver room with 169 snaps.
Wow.
The second place player was Quentin Johnson at 119. I do think that they'll want more explosive play potential there, and like Ladd McConkey will be on the field more in those looks. But just again, worth noting, like, yeah, Trey Harris, they really did love this guy's run blocking. I do think he's capable taking a step in year two to be more of like a good receiver. And he does have some interesting success rates, right? Especially on what I would say are like breaking routes. Dig route success rate solid, good. Slant route success rate solid, just under 77%. Out route success rate 81.8%, while running at a relatively decent volume for that particular route. So definitely that intermediate area, I think, is where Trey Harris can kind of shine, because he was more of a straight line player, you know, at Ole Miss. It was kind of the Alec Pierce route tree. That was actually a player comparison that he kind of had in his prospect profile for, I believe I might have mentioned, I know other people mentioned it as well. But then you get look at some of his season comparables, like really weird comparables in the RP player tool. Tim Patrick is number one, and Jamison Williams' 2024 season is number two. Like, that is a weird. Sammy Watkins' 2019 season with the Chiefs is the third one. Very, very bizarre group of players. And like, kind of, I think that's where Trey Harris is like future. What he's going to be is a little bit still TBD.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, we switch over to the running back position. I want to talk about Seth McGowan coming out of Kentucky, Matt. 6 feet, 223 pounds. He ran a 4.49 40. Really interesting 42.5-inch vertical. I mean, that is impressive vertical leap, and a 10-11 broad. So the short area burst, I think we certainly see that with that head and shoulder fake. But McGowan is an interesting guy here, drafted in the 7th round by Indianapolis. I just think, you can't talk about Seth McGowan without talking about the personal history. Again, he was arrested in 2021 for robbery, conspiracy to commit robbery, and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. He pled guilty to larceny, had the other charges dropped. He spent 3 months in prison and then was on probation for a year. This dude is turning 25 in October, Matt. He's the same age as Breece Hall. He's the same age as Devon Achane. And he's older than Bijan Robinson by a few months. This is about as old of a prospect as you can find in the NFL. That being said, when I charted him, he was a fun watch on just a pure football, on purely just football stuff. I thought he was a fun watch out of Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, the background info on Seth McGowan is about as bad as it could get, right?
Yeah, like, right.
So
right.
the tape better be.
Yeah.
If you're drafting this guy, you know, everything like that. So, really interesting. Obviously, just the background of that and everything. I would say, too, there's some opportunity on this Colts depth chart, you know,
for sure.
Behind Jonathan Taylor, DJ Giddens, it was kind of the number two there. Not sure that that's like a spot that can't be totally undisturbed.
Not a needle mover. Yeah.
Right. So Seth McGowan, there's like something there for him. Odds are just obviously very long. But what did you find about him, like, as a player that made you kind of say he was like a fun watch?
He's got a big motor, man. really big motor, loves to bounce it outside. And I would say that's his best trait and also his worst trait. He's good at getting outside. When you look at the success rates that he posted on the charts, it's again, whether it's man, whether it's zone, he got outside and he got outside at a really good rate and then also succeeded there. Right. So 71% success rate on outside zone, nearly 78% success rate on man gap plays that ended up going outside. And by the way, some clarification, right? Like when I say outside zone, it could be an inside zone play that he then bounces to the outside, right? Same thing with man gap. Like it could be an A gap run. That gap closes down and he bounces and gets to the outside. So I'm not trying to figure out what play they're trying to run. I don't want to do that. You know, like, is this a trap play? Is this going to be, you know what I mean? Like, that's not really what I want to do. I just want to figure out, okay, is it a zone blocking scheme? And then where does he end up running? And if it's man gap or zone, Seth McGowan, when he gets to the outside, really, really good. But I talked about that gap stuff. I thought that's really where, and you see it on the chart too, right? Like on inside man gap plays, a abysmal 41% success rate. And it's because he's always looking to bounce it to the outside. So again, his greatest strength is also his greatest weakness. I thought that was an interesting trait in regards to Seth McGowan.
Yeah. And you almost kind of think like they could maybe use something of that variety. Like if we're talking about bouncing runs to the outside, like bouncing runs off tackle, they were one of the most productive rushing teams in the NFL last year. They ranked 18th on gap runs that went off tackle. And then they were one of the lowest teams in the NFL in terms of yards, 64 yards. Excuse me, I misspoke, 143 yards, 26th most in terms of runs off tackle on zone runs. So they could almost use like maybe a little bit of a change of pace in Indianapolis. Not that you want to give Jonathan Taylor the ball less, but you also don't want to bury him into the ground, especially if they have to kind of ease off on Daniel Jones as a runner a little bit too, which you would imagine they would. He's coming off a freaking torn Achilles and the whole deal. So they kind of need a little bit of something like this, like just a light change of pace, which is I think what you would kind of like to see for Seth McGowan.
Can we talk about scheme though? I know we talk about scheme a lot for wide receivers, maybe not enough for running backs here. I thought this was a weird pairing, Matt, because the Colts were one of two teams to run zone at a lower rate than man gap. So this is literally one of the heaviest man gap teams that you're going to find in the NFL, according to Sports Info Solutions. And yet they got a guy that I don't think is a great gap runner. Like I talk about wanting to get to the outside. That would be awesome if you ran primarily zone runs, right? Like get to the outside, man, run it out there, kid. And he's got a good cutback too. Don't get me wrong. He does have a good cutback. So I think he's more naturally gifted and more naturally slotted in to run zone. And yet he's going to one of the two heaviest man gap teams in the NFL. And then again, you mentioned it too. You talked about how they don't really bounce it to the outside all that much. They're bottom 10 in outside rush rate. Right. So you've got a guy in Seth McGowan. I think he can be a good player. I think he actually be a very consistent contributor as a backup running back. I just don't understand the fit there with Indianapolis. I don't know what they saw in regards to Seth McGowan to say, you know what, we got to get this guy and have him be the backup to Jonathan Taylor. That's where I was a little bit confused.
Well, let's be real. They took him 237th in the NFL.
Yeah. Okay. Like, you know. Okay.
Like,
okay,
let's see if he makes the damn roster, you know, much okay, less fair. Like the whole deal there. So, I do agree. Obviously, they have like a need for a real backup, but they do. That might not be Seth McGowan, but it's like, hey, get him into camp, see if he can run, you know, gap scheme a little bit more. And the Colts do still have, you know, quality offensive line. Like Tanner Bordellini was a good hit for them as a center, replacing Ryan Kelly. Quentin Nelson is still doing the thing.
That's huge.
They're backup running backs right now. They've got Jonathan Taylor. Awesome. After that, it's DJ Giddens. It's Seth McGowan. These other names, Ulysses Bentley, the fourth.
Oh yeah. What a
Anderson,
name.
Anderson Castle, Lincoln Pear. Pare, these guys are like Civil War generals. So I mean, like, there's No disrespect. These guys might be badass NFL running backs. We'll see. So
Ulysses Bentley the fourth. Oh my god. Ulysses
Bentley the fourth.
That is 5'10", 200 That's a Civil War general. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, Ulysses Grant, Civil War general, former president of the United States.
Amazing.
I don't know. We'll see about Ulysses Bentley. Amazing. But yeah, I mean, maybe he's going to be the Colts' number two running back. But there's certainly like a little bit of a hey. These guys they could get to compete and make the roster. So
yeah.
If Seth McGowan can come in here, 6 foot, 223 pounds, good size, as you mentioned, can he come in here and provide a little something, something behind Jonathan Taylor and DJ Giddens? Like, can he take a step in year two? I don't know. That's essentially what they're looking at there with this running game. But yeah, obviously you take a guy 237th overall in the NFL draft. You're not sitting there thinking like, ah, scheme fit, running back. We'll see if he can make the roster, play some special teams, and eventually maybe develop his gap scheme kind of acumen there.
I do think he's the most talented running back as a backup outside of Jonathan Taylor there, Indianapolis. Look, DJ Giddens, I think, is fine. But again, from what I saw, I think Seth McGowan has upside. It's just like I said, I thought the scheme fit was a little weird. His tendencies to run out, to try to bounce outside, didn't seem to match what this team is trying to do, unless they're really trying to change something, which I don't imagine they will. You know, again, Shane Steichen, Jim Bob Cooter, like I think they're going to be pretty set in their way. So I'll be interested to see what ends up happening here. But I will say I do think he's the most talented of the backup running backs, and he has certain traits in his profile that tell me that he can be a really consistent backup contributor in the NFL.
Here's what this conversation has told me.
Yeah.
Christian McCaffrey led the NFL in the regular season with 413 touches. Jonathan Taylor, kind of a distant second, which is just crazy. CMC handled that much work. 369. What this tells me is Jonathan Taylor, be healthy and get ready for 369 touches again, totally, brother. Totally. This guy is going to touch that football a lot this year. Oh, man. And man, we do kind of forget that before the Daniel Jones injury, when the whole offense obviously kind of fell apart, he was absolutely crushing it last year. Was Jonathan
JT
Taylor.
Was going nuts.
He still finished second among running backs in fantasy points, and obviously the whole deal there, in yards from scrimmage, 1,963. Again, Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson cleared 2,000, but JT was right there in terms of yards from scrimmage, and that was with 55 targets compared to 103 for Bijan and 129 for Christian McCaffrey. So just as like a pure runner, man, JT was right up there last year as one of the best in the NFL. And like, based on this conversation, they're going to need an encore. They're going to need an encore from Jonathan Taylor this year.
If we are looking through his first 10 games, so this is not a small sample size, his first 10 games where, again, the Colts are 8-2, they're on top of the world, man. They're feeling like, okay, we're making a postseason run, baby. Like, what a pickup we have for Daniel Jones. This is awesome. Jonathan Taylor in the first 10 games was on pace. He had 1,139 yards. He was on pace to rush for 1,936. He was going to on pace to tack on another 442 receiving yards. I mean, that is so impressive. In those 10 games, he had 15 rushing touchdowns, brother. 17 total. That's wild. That's insane. He was on pace for like almost 30 touchdowns.
Yeah.
He was on pace for 29 touchdowns. That's amazing. Jonathan Taylor, the first half of last year, was absolutely gangbusters. Capped off in week 10 by a 244-yard rushing performance, 42 more on the ground. He had 286 total yards with 3 total touchdowns. Unbelievable stuff and an unbelievable start to the season, first half of the season for Jonathan Taylor last year.
Colts are such a fascinating team this year. Obviously, they're really banking on, you know, Daniel Jones they're kind of just banking on like, hey, if we can just get back to those first 8 games, it's all that really matters, which I think is really, really dangerous. We'll say, saw a little video from the Colts social media account.
Okay.
Josh Downs, quads, looking big, bro.
You put on that weight?
I want him to get on the scale, okay?
Okay.
I need Josh Downs to weigh in. All right, I need it because
we need a post combine.
We need a post combine combine for Josh Downs, because his I've got the Colts roster up here, you know, and I've been looking at it with this whole the Civil War general running backs and the whole deal there. But Josh Downs still listed at 5'9", 171 pounds. I'm telling you, with those quads, he's got to be
pushing 190.
I don't know about 190. We'll see. But he's pushing a little heavier. And maybe they said, hey, bulk up, big guy. You got to be playing in two receiver sets this year. So let's hope. Us Josh Downs bros, we got to hope. Because whether they're bumping runs to the outside or Jonathan Taylor is just beefing up for 369 touches again, they're going to need Josh Downs out there to block a little bit. Otherwise, Nick Westbrook-Akina is going to have to play a ton or something like that. So, yeah, we can't have that. And they're big. They're not only are they really light at running back and with some of these unproven guys you talk about, their receiver room after Alec Pierce and Josh Downs, and obviously we love Josh Downs on this program.
Of course.
You know, they got my guy Deion Burks in the draft, also in the seventh round. And then it's Ashton Doolin, it's Anthony Gould,
it's light.
Laquan Treadwell. By the way, shout out to Laquan just hanging out.
How is he? It's amazing.
He's become actually a really good special teamer. Like, you know what? Obviously didn't work out in the NFL. He's played 10 years. This is his 10th season in the NFL. He's 30 years old as like just a complete draft first round bust. And he's still hanging around. Nick Westbrook-Akina is the other guy there. Like, that is a very light receiver depth chart. So, like, there's no way Josh Downs has to play all the downs this year. Please, God. And those quads, at least I'm thinking, hey, he's got the quads to do it now.
This is his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is his seventh different team in 6 years.
Yeah.
For Laquan Treadwell. Amazing. Minnesota, Atlanta, Jacksonville, Seattle, Baltimore, Indianapolis.
That's right.
Good for you, man.
Good for you, man.
That's amazing.
Cash those checks. Keep
100%. Hey, CTC. Listen, that check clears, baby. We're happy. No, I think you brought up a really, really good point too, by the way. In regards to the depth for Indianapolis, I am terrified of the depth, where the depth was a real strength, I think, especially at wide receiver last year. They trade away Michael Pittman. Alec Pierce is coming off a cleanup procedure on his ankle.
Good point.
You know, it's got a three. I mean, I love that they call it a cleanup procedure, but the guy's going to be out for 3 months. That doesn't sound like a cleanup procedure. You know what I mean? Like, I get that that's what it was, but that sounds like a legitimately like significant, you know, surgery that was done to repair an ankle ligament. I just, like I said, man, I just think that that's very, very shaky. You know, Josh Downs is a smaller player. Alec Pierce
been injured
is
a lot.
Alec Pierce is coming off that ankle injury, man. Like, man, I don't know, man. And again, the heavy workload for JT last year, it's fun to sit here and say, yeah, he's going to see 400 touches next year. As we know, running backs, just unless you're Derrick Henry, they just don't really hold up to this level of work on a year-by-year basis, man. So, I don't know. Depth is looking a little scary here for Indianapolis.
Let's see Deion Burks on the field.
We got to see. But somehow, some way, Jonathan Taylor needs to get his workload reduced.
Totally.
It just needs to happen. So whether it's DJ Giddens or this guy, Seth McGowan, somebody's got to step up and take some of the load off of JT. This is just too much. And again, I would honestly argue that he's their most important player on offense. Without him, I'd be very scared for what this offense would look like. Even with Daniel Jones being somewhat healthy. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
Relying on him all the way, that's scary. Okay, anyways, great show today. Covered a lot of ground here. We got a full-on Denver recap. That was great. That was awesome. For all the Bronco fans out there, that was cool. Anyways, go check out the website, receptionperception.com. If you guys would do us a huge favor, sign up for the newsletter here as well. Go look up the Reception Perception newsletter. Those come out every single week. All right, so anyways, there you go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We got to go. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.